Welcome to Media Mavens,
a bi-weekly podcast where we discuss our favorite
or not so favorite
movies, shows, and games.
I'm Pam.
I'm Riley.
Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Media Mavens podcast. I'm Riley, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Pam.
Hello, everyone.
How are you, Pam?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited to be recording.
Yeah, me too. That's because today we're joined by one of the women who inspired us to even get into podcasting in the first place. It's our friend Apple Cider.
Yay! Hello!
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 I'm so excited to be here. It's so weird and interesting to be a guest. I never get to be a guest.
We're super excited to have you. Like, when we first started, talking about having guests, you were, like, one of the first people on our list.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be part of this, like, cool new podcasting project. You guys are awesome. More women in podcasting. Yay!
Yay!
So, I guess we'll just start off with what we've been up to, as we usually do. Apple Cider, do you want to start us off?
Okay, so I have taken a lot of my free time that I have now, because I am not doing podcasting, to watch a lot of television. I've really gotten into watching television, which is funny because we just canceled our cable. But we have all the subscription services now. So we have like Amazon Prime Video, Netflix, Hulu, all of them. Especially because we have like a PlayStation 4 now, so we use that as like our media box. And I have been watching The West Wing.
Yay.
Recently. Yeah. I had never seen it. I'm like probably the last person.
I haven't watched a single episode either.
Okay, cool. Okay, so I don't feel as alone, but everybody that I know has apparently seen it. And it's just like, they always talk about it in like passing. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll give this a shot because I have watched a lot of shows that are kind of the same type, which is like long form drama, you know, political stuff is not new to me at all, but I was like, is this show gonna hold up? Because it's like from the late 90s, early 2000s. That was a really long time ago now in TV years. You know, like people don't have smartphones yet or anything like that. Yeah. And also, I'm not a huge fan of Aaron Sorkin's writing, but I watched The Newsroom. And it's really interesting to go back to something like West Wing, which is like one of his earlier works, and to see the fact that he hasn't gotten as cynical yet in his work, unlike The Newsroom, which is like really snarky, really cynical, really kind of like, you can see a lot of his personality kind of come through in his writing and how much sneering disgust comes through like the main characters about like, you know, those youngsters, you know, on their social medias, you know.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Those dang millennials.
Yeah, like reading their news and thinking that America's great, we're a shitty, terrible, you know, country, blah blah blah, and I'm a Republican who's magically unbiased on the news, and like what are you doing? I don't know. But so The West Wing is like a lot more positive, and I just started the second season and have a lot of feelings about it, because I know a lot of people have said that it kind of loses steam kind of along the way, so I'll see how long I kind of go with it. Other than that, I have been playing Stardew Valley a lot, which is like my favorite game right now because it's like very cool single player. It's like Harvest Moon, even though I've never played a Harvest Moon game, but it's a farming sim for PC and it's very engaging and very fun. And on mobile, I have been playing Sailor Moon Drops, which is like the Dark Souls of Match 3 games. So
are you like crushing your phone in frustration yet, or
I almost did, listed, but I couldn't get mad at Sailor Mercury, so I didn't. yeah,
that's probably, if you know what, if there was a Dark Souls that was actually like Sailor Moon, like you play one of the Sailor Scouts or something, I would totally be into that.
I know, right? Like, this is such a great, like, kind of concept. It's just, the Sailor Moon drops breaks the, like, match 3 format in that the matches aren't timed. It's not timed, unlike, you know, Bejeweled Blitz, and it's not a match 3, like, Puzzle and Dragons, where it's just the, like, RPG kind of thing where you level up the characters for certain abilities to, like, you know, bust the different, like, you know, colors to defeat enemies. It's kind of a mixture of the two of those kinds of, like, styles of match 3 where it's match 3 strategy, if that makes any sense. You get a limited number of moves to complete an objective within a match 3 game mechanic. So some of the boards are like break the blocks, some are drop items off of the board, some are match a certain number of colors, and because you have those limited moves, it focuses the kind of core mechanics around making really smart combinations in as little moves as possible, which is extremely hard to do because it's every board is randomized. Yeah.
That does sound hard, because I know personally when I play a match 3 game, there's no forethought involved at all. Like, it's not like I'm playing chess and thinking ahead. It's just like, oh, these colors go together.
Yeah. Down and you win.
Yeah. No, that's exactly why Bejeweled works, is because you're just like match colors, and you just try to do it as fast as possible. And this is like completely the opposite. So that's actually why it's so frustrating, because you'll just be trying to figure out how to best complete an objective, and you'll run out of moves. And that's how they kind of get you to do the, like, free-to-play aspect of it, is they intentionally raise the difficulty so that you're forced to, like, buy items that will help you out, or buy more moves by buying, like, gems and stuff like that. I've only bought one series of gems. I, like, bought, like, 10 gems, and it's, like, 5 gems for 5 extra moves or something like that. And that was because I was, like, one move away from winning the board. So I, like, broke down and got, like, 99 cents worth of gems. But I think an alternative way of getting good at the game is to basically progress through the stages to get additional Sailor Scouts and then level them up in an RPG style fashion, because that unlocks different abilities of the Sailor Scout that you pick, and that will also help you beat a board. So there's an alternative progression path, but it's still it's punishing. It's not an easy game, especially because they have, like, limited time events, and the limited time events are actually really, really difficult. So beware.
I've seen a lot of people playing it on my Twitter timeline. Like, seems like everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
It sounds just hard, though. Yeah. It sounds like there was a free Pokemon game that I got on my DS. Oh, gosh. I don't remember what it's called. But it sounds like the same kind of thing, but those levels were timed. So I guess that's the only difference. But, like, everything else sounded the same. You just match Pokemon instead of symbols or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the non-timed aspect is nice, just in that if you are somebody who likes to play mobile games while you're, like, doing other stuff, it means you can effectively play a match as long as you, like, play a board as long as you want, which is great.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it completely messes up what you thought the strategy would be, and it takes a while to learn a board so that you can, like... Here's the scoring system, is that in order to clear a board, you have to complete the objective before your moves run to zero. And you get a variable number of moves depending on, like, what that board is, because there's, like, numbered stages. So if you clear the objective, okay, that's good. But they also have a points bar that fills up and, like, rates your performance. So you see how many stars you got on each little, like, stage when you look at the whole game board. And because I'm an obsessive person, I have been trying to 3-star every single board before I move on to the next one.
Oh, no.
And you only get to replay a board if you have hearts, and you only get 5 hearts to retry a board if you fail or if you want to get a higher score. And so there's the, like, loop of trying to get you to spend money to buy, like, more hearts, or, you know, they don't have an energy system, but they sort of do. It's very, you know, free to play mechanics. So it's good because it's a way of limiting me from, you know, sitting and just playing this game for hours. So that's good at least.
Sounds fun. I had a question about Stardew Valley to loop back to that. I played it once for a couple hours, and then I got bored. Do you have any recommendations for someone to, like, get into it?
I have to ask, what did you get bored by?
I think it was just that, maybe not bored, but, like, impatient, because I wanted to be able to plant a ton of stuff. Because, of course, like, I've seen pictures of other people's farms, and they're huge, but mine's, like, this tiny little plot, and I'm like, but I want that right now.
Yeah, that is the thing, is that it's kind of like a snowball effect, and a lot of what you're limited by in the very early game, so, like, the first year of your farm, is money, time, and resources. And there's, when I first started playing Stardew Valley, my boyfriend had played it for a while before I picked it up, because he was on vacation from his job. So he basically played, like, Stardew Valley for 3 weeks. And so he gave me a lot of tips, but I also read a lot of reviews and, like, you know, top 10 tips for Stardew Valley. And the Stardew Valley Reddit is also really helpful for beginners. Okay. And one of the things I have to tell people automatically is, as fast as you can do it, get the 300 wood to complete the quest to get the bridge over to the other side of the beach, because foraging is a really great way to get money in the early game. And I'm not somebody that wants to min-max Stardew Valley, because min-maxing for a game that's supposed to be really relaxing is kind of counterintuitive, but if you want a lot of money really quickly,
I do.
Yeah. Foraging seashells on the other beach every couple of days, and foraging for, like, fruits and nuts in the forests, and starting to, like, do mining stuff in the dungeon or the cave when you get to that, are a really easy way, because then you just, like, drop everything into your, like, little box and sell it all, and it's a really easy way to get money, and that will let you buy plants. However, it is like a snowball effect, so it will take you a while to accumulate enough money to have, like, a huge farm. Like, I'm at the end of my second year, and I still don't have a giant farm, but I've gotten to the point now where I've accumulated enough, like, farm animals that's where the real moneymaker is for farming, on top of learning what the real cash crops are. And the real cash crops are the ones where you plant them and they keep giving you stuff every couple of days.
So, oh, like, yeah. So you don't have to, like,
blueberries. Yeah, blueberries, cranberries, like, any of the berries, because then they sell for a ton of money. They sell for a ton of money when you make them into, like, wine or jam or, like, stuff like that. But also, there's some really good resources out there for Stardew Valley. There is a crop planner calendar. The Stardew Valley official wiki is a really good place because you can look up, like, crop prices and, you know, the stuff that sells for the most money over the shortest amount of time. And I use that religiously because it's just a good way to kind of give yourself, like, little, like, tips and stuff like that. But it is a patience game.
Okay. Yeah, like, and I've never really played a game like that before, so.
Me either.
Like, yeah, the first couple days, I was like, I don't know about this. I just want to build a bunch of stuff and, like, be the berry baron or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, that's kind of what is the ultimate goal. And I definitely, like, I'll say I got a lot of help. And the game provides a lot of, like, really good hooks to keep you kind of on the line for, you know, sticking around and stuff like that. So yeah, it's like start small, but over enough time, it'll start to actually, like, get very quick that you'll actually start to be able to do, like, the really wild stuff.
Cool. Yeah. I'll have to jump back into it, someday. See what I can do. Pam, what have you been up to since the last time we hung out together?
Well, I watched Creed, which I know I'm rather behind the curve on this one, but I really wanted to see the movie, and I wanted to watch it with my boyfriend because I thought that he would like it too, except every time I brought it up, he would just start singing Can You Take Me Higher, and I was like, no,
oh my God.
No, that's not it. That's not what it's about. And finally, I convinced him that it was not a movie about the rock band, and we watched the movie together.
So it's not like an hour-long video of, like, their tour or something?
That would be terrible.
No. Oh, no, it's not. It's actually, and I didn't know this until fairly recently, it's actually a Rocky movie.
What?
I'd never seen a Rocky movie before, so I didn't know. I know that Sylvester Stallone got nominated for an Oscar, and I was like, oh, that's weird that Sylvester Stallone's in that movie, and then I found out, oh, it's because it's a Rocky movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, it's actually, I mean, okay, I'm telling you a secret. You guys are not supposed to know because you're Canadian, but you actually are required as an American to watch all of the Rocky movies.
I guess that's why, I haven't watched the Rocky movies either.
it's kind of a thing. We also have to watch all the Terminator movies, too.
I've seen those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but no, it's like, yeah, it. I thought it was really interesting that they decided to go in that direction because it also felt like they updated the Rocky, like, story for the movie, which is, like, focusing on Apollo Creed's son, which I feel is a little bit more of, like, a relevant and sort of more timely story to have as a Rocky movie.
Yeah, so I quite enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not a huge sports fan, but I love sports movies. Sports movies are always superior to the actual sports, I find. Like,
yes.
It's so true.
A good training montage is just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Training and, like, montages.
Swelling victory music. Like, yeah.
So I really enjoyed the movie. And Michael B. Jordan sure got hot since he was on The Wire. So that was
good. My God. I totally forgot he was on The Wire.
Yeah, he was Wallace. So,
jeez, I'm the worst.
Yeah. So his name is Adonis Creed, and, like, he literally looks like an Adonis. Oh. It's kind of ridiculous. But, yeah, I enjoyed the movie.
His name is Adonis?
His seriously? Name is Adonis.
Yeah, because his father is Apollo.
I know, but the... Okay.
So that was good. I enjoyed that. I've also been playing Hate Plus, which is a visual novel by Christine Love, and it's the sequel to Analog: A Hate Story. In the first game in Analog, you play an investigator who's trying to find the reason for the disappearance of this, like, interstellar generation ship where this, like, huge tragedy occurred, and you're trying to find out what exactly happened through reading the computer logs, which include people's diaries and letters and log files and things like that. So the sequel to the game, Hate Plus, tells the story about the civilization on that ship, which somehow went from being fairly progressive and equal, at least as far as gender is concerned, to being extremely patriarchal and misogynistic. So you're discovering the story of how that happened with the help of one or maybe two of the ship's AI who you met in the first game. I really enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed this one a little bit more than the first. It's really well written. The story of sort of this, how this society goes down the drain, is pretty interesting. And it's part, like, some people call it a dating sim because you can sort of date the AI girls who help you, which is kind of weird. Cool. At all. Yeah, well, I guess it is a little bit weird. You promise to get them bodies when you bring them back to Earth. Oh, so okay. I guess that makes it better. Apple Cider, you played this, the first one, didn't you?
No, Zoofy did.
Oh, Zoofy did? Okay. Yeah. I thought I saw it on your Steam thing.
Oh, there's a lot of games on my Steam thing. There's a lot of games that I have not played yet. Yeah, I have all of Christine's games. I have not been able to sink any appreciable amount of time into them, although she's coming out with a new one called Lady Killer in a Bind I saw the demo for at GX3, mm-hmm. that looked really interesting, although very not work safe.
Oh, yeah.
That is a very adult game for adults.
Yeah, this one, I'm generally, like, not huge on the visual novels, but this one's written pretty well, and you can sort of read at your own pace, and the story is really well told. And this one even sort of incorporates some real-time elements, which I have mixed thoughts on. Like, the game takes place over 3 days, and at the end of the first day, you run out of power, so you have to shut down and get power for the next day, and it's like, come back in 12 hours. And I'm like, okay, continue. And it's like, no, literally, you have to wait 12 hours before you can start day two. And there's also a part where one of the AI wants to make a cake with you, and you're like, okay, I'll make a cake. And she gives you a recipe, and she's like, this will take an hour. And I was like, okay. And then continue, and she's like, no, what, you think you can just push a few buttons and have a relationship with me? Go make the cake.
Oh my god. Oh my gosh.
So on one hand, that's kind of cute. On the other hand, like, I had put aside time to play the game, and I kind of wanted to play it.
Isn't it the future? Where's my Insta cake?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, replicators? Like, yeah.
We can make mug cakes in the microwave.
Well, actually, that was my mistake, because she's like, you can make this 5-minute cake, or you can make the real cake. And I was like, since I like cooking, I'm like, well, I'll make the real cake. But I should have picked the mug cake. But I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it enough to play through it 2 more times to see the story as it plays out with each of the different AI. So, I like that game. Other than that, I played through The Walking Dead Season 1, which was not for the first time. It was for the second time, just since my relationship with Telltale has sort of been degrading. I thought, oh, well, I'll go back to The Walking Dead Season 1 and see if it's
try to
still
get that spark back.
Yeah, try to get that spark back. And I did find it was no less emotionally devastating second time around.
It's so good.
It just works so well, because even though there are life and death decisions, what I mostly get out of it is, like, building this relationship with Clementine and teaching Clementine, and just the writing's really good, and it's actually written by Sean Vanneman, who wrote Firewatch, which we'll be discussing a little bit later.
Oh, but, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so yeah. I really enjoyed my second playthrough. I tried to make some different decisions, but it's just like that game just pulls at my emotions, and I'm like, I can't make the bad decision.
Yeah, because then you do something bad, and then you get the little, Clementine will remember that. And you're no, don't remember. It's bad. I did a bad thing.
Exactly.
Please don't remember that.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. How about you, Riley?
Let's see. So I went back and watched Titan AE. I don't know if either of you have seen...
I have not seen it.
Is that what is that?
it's a space movie, an animated space movie. Like it's like in the style, like the animation style, kind of like of Anastasia. I think the same artist was on it, if I'm remembering correctly. But it's like the story of humanity after Earth gets blown up by this alien race called the Dredge. And they have to find the Titan, which is, like, supposed to save the human race, and humans are few and far between in the universe. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, I forgot kind of how good it was. It's, like a Firefly.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I always get this movie confused with Treasure Planet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
They're not the same. They're not the same at all because, like, Treasure Planet is like soft future sci-fi, sort of like steampunk sci-fi.
Yeah,
and this is definitely like sci-fi.
Yeah, and the captain is like a cat lady with like really tall boots. Yeah. Yeah. This one, Titan AE, is like grittier. Like it's. Like, space is dirty. But yeah, I went back and I watched it because I'm playing in a new tabletop game in the Star Wars rule set. So I was like, gotta get some space inspiration. But if you haven't seen Titan AE, I highly recommend it. And then, of course, Game of Thrones premiered. And I know that I'm setting myself up for disappointment by watching it again. However, the first episode was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, so this is not going to be spoiler free if anybody's listening and hasn't watched Game of Thrones. I am super glad that Brienne finally caught up to Sansa because...
Finally, and Sansa finally said yes.
Oh my god. So I'm hoping that Brienne and Sansa just go and... destroy.
Kill all the men.
Everything. Yeah. Valar Morghulis. Yeah, I hope that they just destroy everything. One of the complaints that I have, though, is that they're completely fucking the Dorne storyline. So.
I don't remember the Dorne storyline that well from the book.
Okay, so in the book, Ilaria Sand is super opposed to, like, extra killing. Mm-hmm. And in the show, she wants to kill, like, everyone. She killed the King of Dorne. She killed, like, the Prince of Dorne. Like, the Sand Snakes, like, I don't know. The Sand Snakes
are shitty. Like, they were shitty last season. Yeah. And they don't seem to be getting better.
No, they're not. So, yeah. I mean, a couple of good things happened. A couple of bad things happened. Like, the Dorne storyline. Fuck that. Mm-hmm. And then, just looping back to the tabletop stuff. I seem to, like, be inundated with tabletop lately because I tweeted about wanting to do more tabletop, and suddenly I have, like, tabletop games that kind of switch weeks. So in between the Dragon Age one, I have the new Star Wars one, and then I'm also doing Storium game, which is really fun. So I'm finding that I'm, like, busier in terms of RPG stuff, so I haven't really had a lot of time to actually play video games. Mm-hmm. Especially because, the Overwatch beta went down, like, the closed beta went down, so I haven't had Overwatch to play, and the nice thing about Overwatch is, like, you can play for, I don't know, a half hour, and then you can be done.
Yeah.
and you can just jump in and be done with it. So now that it's gone, I'm kind of like, I lost my filler game, and I'm so, like, I feel bad for being like, man, I really don't want to play with all the new people, but I don't. And like, everybody starts somewhere in FPS games, so I just have to remember that at one time I was the new person.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I hate about these betas that invite so many people. Like, I'm not in the Overwatch beta, and I feel like I'm just at a huge disadvantage if I start playing, like, when it actually comes out.
It was noticeable in, like, the beta weekends where they opened it to everybody. Like, you could tell who had been playing for a while and who hadn't, regardless of the ranks that were on everybody's nameplates. Mm-hmm. Like, there were people that, you know, they knew how to play already, and they knew the strategies of the maps, and they knew what heroes to pick on the maps, and who to counter, like, so, I mean, eventually, that comes with time, just learning how to adapt to the map and the different teams.
But it's like they're creating this whole, like, two-tiered system, where I think a lot of the people who go in as newbies at the start will just be scared away by...
People
being better than them and then being shitty about being better than them.
Yeah, I've heard people concerned about that.
I got to play for the stress test.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also going to be in the open beta because I pre-ordered. And I usually don't like PvP games. They stress me out. They're too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like them. They're not something I find entertaining. But I played this, and it reminded me of my old days with TF2, and I'm like, oh, God, not another game I have to play now that's fun, and I didn't care that I was bad, and I definitely was bad, but there's, like, so little interaction with your team, the rounds are really short, if you die a bunch of times, it's not a huge deal, like, you can play against AI to get a feel of the characters. You can play a custom match to just run around the maps and look at stuff, which is something that I did. And Overwatch did a couple of, like, really cool things with, like... Like, I watched that whole documentary that GameSpot put out.
Yeah, that was so good.
Yeah! Like, I hope that somebody keeps doing stuff like that, because I actually find the game design... concepts of Overwatch a lot more interesting than the game itself, even if the game is actually really fun. But they've started to craft this, like, world with a narrative that I actually want to, like, please put out a story mode Overwatch, because I want to know more about that, and I want to read all the comic books, and I want to draw all the fan art, and I want to, like, write fan fiction. Like, I don't care about shooting people in the face. Blizzard, just give me more fan art, give me more comic books.
Like, tell me about your world.
Yeah, exactly. You put all of this energy into it, and this huge game failed, and you, like, birthed this baby out of the ashes of Titan. Please tell me what's going on with Overwatch.
And all the videos that they put out, like the little cinematics for the characters, they're so good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just really, like, I want to see more of those. Like, just, I don't know. Only about the women characters, though.
Yeah.
I don't care about the male characters.
I've noticed.
I don't care about the male characters.
I like the monkey.
Yeah.
Well, actually, well, yeah, no, he's okay. Winston's good. Winston's good, yeah.
He's a scientist, Pam.
Yeah,
sorry.
I've noticed, though, I've noticed that McCree and, what's his face, Reinhardt, they both got comics. They don't have a video yet. And so far, the videos have been what Winston, Reaper, and then, because they're in one together, and then Widowmaker and Tracer are in one together. But McCree and Reinhardt didn't get a video. They got a comic book.
Well, you know, I guess they're, like, broody backstories or something. I don't know. Like, I haven't seen the Reinhardt comic book or
the McCree comic book. It just came out. The Reinhardt one was today, I think.
There's apparently a lot of Reinhardt fan art on Tumblr, though.
Really? Is it like... Oh, no. Okay.
It's the silver-haired, like, daddy.
No!
Club. Yeah. I was gonna...
As soon as you said daddy, I was like, God damn it!
Yeah, like, oh, Reinhardt took off his helmet. Oh, look at that silver fox. Like, and I'm like, oh, no. You know, like, because I follow a lot of Warcraft fan artists mm-hmm. who are really into, like, they do some, like, really cool stuff, but apparently, like, Reinhardt in, like, a picture or the comic book, like, takes his helmet off and he's got, like, the sexy chiseled silver hair, you know, buff dude sort of look to him. So, of course, they were all like, why, hello there. You know? So there's all this fan art now.
I mean, you know, whatever floats your boat, I guess. So speaking of games that have, like, tons of customization, the new Diablo patch has, like, wings and shit. Mm-hmm. You can get, like, butterfly mm-hmm. wings.
What?
So, yeah. Yes. Butterfly
what?
Wings.
What?
Mm-hmm. Like, they have monarch butterfly wings and, like, green butterfly wings. And there's, like, there's a pet that's, like, the girl from iZombie, I think.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I thought that wasn't real.
It's
real. I thought
real.
That was fake.
At least I think it is. Then they fooled me. But it...
Oh. Yeah, it I retweeted a picture from yeah. one of the actors today. Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if that's real or not, but I wish it's real. There's a lot of pets and stuff.
I hope it's real.
A lot. A lot of things.
So, and, like, I only jump into Diablo, like, on the seasons, like, you know, most people yeah. do. I'm going to probably do that, maybe not this weekend, but next weekend. But yeah, I'm excited because I like looking good in video games, and butterfly wings sounds like the kind of thing I'm interested in, so. Alright, so I guess we'll move right along to the topic of the episode today, which is Firewatch. Sort of like Overwatch, but not at all.
But completely different.
Yeah.
They both have Watch in their names, so... Okay. What did we all think of Firewatch? I loved it, personally. I thought it was fantastic. And it reminded me a lot of working in the national park a couple summers ago.
Which yeah, you've great. Got that sort of personal I do. Connection there.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was even, like, a watchtower at the visitor center where I worked. So got to go up there and look around. Although the dangers of fire weren't as severe.
Well, as they you're were also in... probably working with more competent rangers and watchers than maybe Henry and Delilah.
That's
are.
Possible.
That's true. They are not good at their jobs.
Yeah. Just for any listeners who maybe have not played Firewatch before, it was released in February of 2016 by Campo Santo, and it is. What would you classify Firewatch as?
Narrative explorer.
Narrative explorer. That's perfect. Yeah. You had that answer ready.
I have not seen every single developer interview that Campo Santo has done for this game at all.
So it's a narrative explorer game where you play a man named Henry who has gone to be a warden at Shoshone National Park, and the game takes place in the end of the 80s?
Yes. Yeah, I think like 88, 87.
Yeah, so you find out he sort of has some problems that he is running away from, and a summer alone watching out for fires seems like a good a place as any for him to be.
Oh, Henry.
Oh, Henry. Yeah, I was actually, I mean, okay, full disclosure, I am friends with many of the people who made this video game. I've interviewed two of the developers for this video game, so I am a little bit biased, but I actually really loved this game. I loved the dialogue style. I definitely loved how real the forest looked. I loved the story. I loved playing Henry. I just... Everything about this game, especially for a game, like the first game that a studio put out, you know, it was just so good. And I mean, okay, granted, Campo Santo is a very small team of like ex developers of like a lot of other very well-known titles, and like it, you know, like it was co-founded by Sean Vanaman and Jake Rodkin, who are very well-known for Telltale. They also had Ali Moss and Jane Ang, who are extremely veteran artists and environmental developers in their own right. Like, they had a lot of people on this project that are just very talented at what they do. And I don't know, like, I just thought it was a really strong first showing and just really kind of had this really, really great story that basically explores being out in the woods by yourself and what life is like when you're running away from your problems. And I liked that it featured a character who is neither young nor, like, considered to be conventionally attractive. He's not also skinny. Like, he's just like a 30, 40 something year old dude who is trying to, like, deal with his life and deal with this, like, other woman named Delilah and her problems, and then the problems they're dealing with out in the woods with, like, fires and, you know, creepy people and rowdy teens. And so
I want to talk a bit about the opening sequence in particular. Okay. Like, I found it really interesting, like, the way that the story kind of gets told, because you, like, you are Henry, but at the same time, you don't really have any control over the end of that sequence. Like, yeah. No matter what happens, Julia's family comes and takes her away.
Yeah.
And then you take the job. Like, that's Henry, the man Henry, like the character, he is taking that job, and you are like, well, I guess I'm just kind of along for the ride at this point. So I thought that was really interesting compared to, you know, other kind of first person like RPG games where you're the one making most of the choices, and no matter what, you always end up with that outcome. Plus, I've never seen the beginning of a game be told with like a Twine kind of format. Like, yeah. I guess a big name game, really. Like, I don't think anything else really has that. So I thought that was unique and a really, really good way to get you into the story. And, like, by the time you finish that, it's like, I didn't ask for these feels.
Yeah, you've already been emotionally devastated by that point. Like, 10 minutes into this game, mm-hmm. and you're just like, oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to, like, sit back for a second and, like, take a couple breaths, because I was like, ugh. Like, the only other game that's hit me in the beginning has been Ori and the Blind Forest. Mm. Uh-huh. With the same kind of, like, here's all the sad shit in the beginning. Now play.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the opening was really effective, because I didn't really know what I was getting, because, I mean, you'd seen the trailers and things mm-hmm. and all the beautiful art and the park and everything, but it just opens up with just this text and it says, you see Julia across the room, talk to her. And it's sort of, yeah, I didn't really know where it was going from there, but just the sort of introduction of the story intercut with little parts where you are Henry and you are traveling towards the park for the summer, I just thought that was really really effective. Although when I played the game first, when it made me choose between two dogs, I was like,
that was
stuck.
So hard.
I was like, this game is too hard. I can't make a decision.
For me, I was like, well, whatever Julia wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. I went with the beagle.
It's, I actually thought that style of opening it up with like a Twine game, but intercut with the scenes of Henry walking, was such, like, okay, so a lot of, like, talk in criticism circles of video games talks about how video games really, really want to be movies in a lot of ways. Mm. They always talk about a cinematic feel to something, despite the fact that movies are a piece of medium that they, like, they're a medium that does their own thing, which is tell a narrative visually and what everything else that comes with that. And video games tell a narrative or explain a mechanic in an interactive way. like baseline. Mm-hmm. And so games have this ability to do something that movies can't, which is, you know, not like, like they shouldn't ape being cinematic, but that they have the this interactivity to play with. But on the other hand, I felt that Firewatch's opening with the Twine game and the intercut, it was a, that was actually very cinematic. That yeah. was a interactive experience that was absolutely informed by cinematic editing and visual techniques, because they also do the like day one, day two, like smash cut. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They bring up that title screen, like at the moment where you realize something fucked up happened. So I was like, this is definitely like written and scripted by people that have a very deep understanding of things that aren't video games, which I really appreciated. And I felt like the Twine game sort of beginning was such a swerve, because like you said, games don't games that have the ability to be like three-dimensional and explore an environment tend to be talked about and looked at a certain way versus things like interactive fiction, dynamic fiction, visual novels, things like that, which are, you know, largely static images and it's a lot of dialogue. And Twine in particular has gotten like a lot of flack for, you know, being, well, it's not really a game or whatever. And the fact that, yeah, the fact that like Sean made that decision to start the story like that and really kind of get your emotional juices going just from like the first step that you take. Like, it was so great, because I'm playing through this and I'm like, oh God, what other shoe is going to drop here? Mm-hmm. Because if you know that you're having this life with Julia and yet it's intercut with Henry alone on a path in the deep forest, what happened in the time between where I am in the story textually and where I am in the story visually? So it was just such a, it was such a great, I don't know, it's like, it's so funny, I'm talking about the first 10 minutes of a game like for like 18 hours, but I thought that it was so effective, and that kind of sense of story absolutely carried into the eventual arc of the narrative in Firewatch when you actually start to get into like the mystery and the like problems and actual like plot that you go through when you're actually at the lookout tower.
This game really did it right, because so many games open up and something happens to the protagonist. Most of the time their family dies or something, and you don't care because you don't know their family, you don't know how they feel. But in this, even though it's just done with text, like, you get a sense of the relationship, the positives and the negatives of it, the challenges of it, so you're already invested even though you've basically just picked a few text options.
Yeah.
Gosh, they did such a good job with that.
Yeah. I also thought that one of the other major strong points besides just the visuals, I really liked how they did the dialogue with like the walkie-talkies, because that's like so organic and so natural that like, oh yeah, you're talking in a walkie-talkie, they're out in the woods, it's the only way you can contact people. But the fact that Henry is like a complicated guy who isn't necessarily doing the right thing, like, it's very strongly implied throughout the entire thing, especially in, with your interactions with Delilah, that Henry being out in the woods is not a great decision. Like you said, Pam, instead of it being like the major crux of the plot starting is like some tragic, traumatic event that has like split the protagonist's life into like two parts, this is something that Henry is emotionally in the middle of when we start our story, because she's not dead, so we don't have to just like pretend she doesn't exist. That reality, that gravity of her still being here and that problem still being something that Henry has to address at some point hanging over our heads, kind of like a sword of Damocles, like, mm-hmm. I love that that's where we are in the story, that Henry is choosing to ignore his problems for a while, and that repeatedly gets brought up throughout the story in the midst of like everything else that's going on. I thought that that was really good, because it felt like more of a real story to me versus like a lot of the like tragic man pain sort of protagonist stuff that happens in a lot of video games.
Sure.
Yeah, like Julia, she feels like an actual person. Like, she's, you know, she's just as tangible as Henry or even Delilah, because you never see Delilah. And the only thing that you see of Julia is, like, a picture, but her face is hidden. So, like, there is somebody out there who Henry loves, you know, and there's something very wrong, and he just left in the middle of everything that's going on, so...
If I had to give any sort of criticism about Firewatch, I guess the downsides for me, number one, was not actually the ending, despite the fact that, like, a lot of other people had problems with the ending, and I actually found it really normal, was that there was some bugginess in the game. I got stuck in a cave. I literally got stuck in a cave. And the cave is one of the major plot points for the story in the third act. So basically, I won't give too much of the plot away, but one of the things that happens during the summer, obviously there's a giant fire and there's kind of like this ongoing like mystery slash like conspiracy that might be happening around you. But the resolution to that sort of occurs with you finally getting the key to go into this like locked cave that's like beneath your fire watchtower. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to walk into the cave and look down at a certain point, and you'll get, like, a visual, like, text of, like, what you're looking at. And then you're supposed to, like, leave the cave and do something else and come back in and this, that, and the other thing. I didn't see that the first time, so I'm completely confused. I leave the cave, I do something, I go back in, I get really confused. I try to talk to Delilah on the radio, and she's like, go back to the cave, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be looking at or where I'm supposed to go. So I finally see the visual cue I'm supposed to see first, or should have caught, like, earlier. And I'm like, oh, okay. But then how do I get down to that? And I couldn't figure that out because my body had actually gotten stuck in the wall. But then I somehow clipped through the wall and then fell down into the part of the story I needed to be at anyway. So then it was all fine, but yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I didn't find any game-breaking things, but I had a couple places where I'd, like, shimmy myself up onto a rock that I wasn't supposed to be on, and then I'd have to, like, wiggle my way out of it. And I also, one of my complaints, which may just be a personal thing, is that I was terrible at navigating in this game. Like, you get a map and you get a compass, but particularly near the end of the game when you get that the tracker that beeps at you.
Oh, God, I was terrible at that.
I was very, very bad at following the tracker to where it wanted me to go.
Yeah. I heard a lot of people that had a lot of problems with the navigation, and that there's so many parts of the story where you have to walk a really long distance, and if you get lost or turn around or have to repeat your steps at any point, all it does is kind of like drag out that part of the story, especially if Delilah's like, are you there yet? Are you there yet? You know, are you there yet? You know, like,
and you're like, no, God damn it.
God damn it, Delilah. I'm only one man. I can only walk so fast.
I didn't take orienteering in high school. Please forgive me.
But I thought that the story was actually pretty unique. And I think that's kind of, when I read a lot of reviews and a lot of, like, criticism of the story, a lot of what people had problems with is that I think that they got too involved with the mystery being real, because you kind of find out that the stuff that you thought may have been an ongoing conspiracy maybe not be that on the surface. Connected to a lot of other stuff, and I think that people thought that it was going to be, and for a while I actually thought it was going to be something supernatural, something not mundane, basically. And like for the first part of the story, I thought, like, oh, is Delilah in on this? is there a ghost? Is Delilah really dead? You know, like, you know, like that sort of stuff. But when I found out that it was something really mundane, I actually found that more clever than it being mm-hmm. like an actual like mystery, but maybe that's because I haven't played a lot of video games that do kind of deal with conspiracy elements, mm-hmm. but I think that's a lot of reasons why I think a lot of people were like really bummed out by the ending being so normal and not very conclusive, because basically the ending is like, okay, there's this big fire, you really have to leave the woods, and you basically tell Delilah a number of things, but ultimately, no matter what you pick, she's not there when you get to the end, mm-hmm. when you get to her cabin, for good reasons, because you have one last conversation with her on the radio, and that's basically where you kind of vaguely decide if you had sort of continued with like an emotional relationship with her. You know, you talk to her, and it's very unclear. The only thing that's really clear about it is that you guys are probably never going to actually meet. You're probably never going to have a relationship. You have to confront the fact that you still have a wife
yep.
in Australia who's dying, or, you know, like has a you know, a disease that is so debilitating that she's not really herself anymore. And I thought that that was really good, because this wasn't a story about pat cut and dry solutions to your problems. It was about acknowledging the reality that sometimes things don't have a happy ending, and not even a sad ending, but just a regular ending. Like, this is a real guy with a real life and a real problem that he's really ignoring, and he really can't have an emotionally intimate relationship with someone he barely knows and didn't ever actually meet physically, and she doesn't have her shit straight, and they're just going to be like two ships passing in the night, and he's got to go back to his real life and stop playing fire, you know, fire watch person out mm-hmm. in the woods. And I thought that that was actually kind of a bold choice. And so people that kind of got upset about the ending, I was like, is it because they're so used to those kinds of endings, or have I just watched way too many indie films?
I like the ending. There were points in the game where I was sure that like Henry was gonna die out there, because whoever like clocks you in the back of the head, I was like, oh my god, like, I'm out here alone with no other way to contact anybody except for this tiny walkie-talkie, like, I'm going to die out here alone and miserable. Yeah. And like, I totally bought into there being a conspiracy. Like, I went back and I read every note that I'd collected. I went back and I made notes, like, who are these two dudes that are like leaving notes for each other in the caches? Like, and I went back and I looked, and I was like, okay, maybe it's not these guys, because this seems like it's older. And I was in it for that part of it. And then when it got to the point where it wasn't that at all, I was like, oh, good. Like, I don't, like, that much stress, like, being alone somewhere, like, I felt that that was so close to real life, where you psych yourself out so much. Like, even with what happens to the girls' camp, I was like, oh, like, because I could see that happening to actual, like, women that are out camping by themselves. So I was like, this is actually a thing that could happen to somebody. And then when it wasn't anything, like, super sinister, I was relieved. I was like, oh my goodness, yeah. This is much better than I thought it was going to be. But I thought they did an excellent job of making you feel like it was going to be some spooky thing that was happening to you, with, like, the music that kind of pops up when something happens.
Yeah.
Like, these, like, just the little, all of a sudden the music cues in and you're like, oh no. Oh. And you just get like a little bit frightened. And then even Henry's voice changes and Delilah's voice changes. And like, they both react, you know, the way that the player, I think, would react if you were out there too, where you're like, what the hell is happening? Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I agree. I thought it was, it reminded me a bit of Gone Home.
Yeah.
Where they, sets up this creepy atmosphere and a couple things happen and it makes you think it's going to be a scary game or there's going to be something supernatural to it, mm-hmm. and it just ends up being more for atmosphere and more to keep the tension up rather than the actual point of the story.
Yeah, it definitely took a lot of story cues from Gone Home in that. It also Gone Home has a really kind of like real life ending too. Mm-hmm. Except at least that's a happy ending. Like that actually has like kind of sort of has a happy ending versus Firewatch. But I think that they did a really good job with tempering expectations, just because it's like, you know, your brain does get away from you at times, and often it's often not what you think it is initially, and that I think it kind of sewed up the whole Henry needs to kind of confront reality instead of getting farther and farther into this fiction that somehow the world is not the world that he's in and that it's not the life he's living when really it is. And I thought that that was just such a sobering resolution when it kind of flips the idea of what we think of gaming as, which is escapism, kind of on its head a little bit. And I thought a lot of close reads that kind of hewed to that sort of message was really interesting. And I kind of think it played into a lot of the promotional aspects that the game included because, so Campo Santo did this thing called the Campo Santo Quarterly, which was a little bit of a goofy update about the game, but it was mostly writing and interviews done by Duncan Fife to not promote the game so much, but actually just kind of build up this canon of, like, I consider it kind of like a literary pin board for the game because it kind of seemed like things that inspired the game or directly influence it. Like, they did an interview with these people that built this like very strange house in the middle of like Cody, Wyoming, which is where Sean Vandeman grew up, and how that kind of like affected the family and also Sean. And they did like a bunch of, you know, just like little stories and stuff like that. So it kind of gave a little bit of the sense of where these people were coming from artistically as developers, as well as, you know, like I feel like we don't get that kind of sense of developers at all. Like, I feel like we treat game developers sometimes as people who aren't also artists because we just see them as like either programmers or character designers or environment designers. We see them as designers versus artists. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit misleading because everybody who creates something, whether it's programming or trees or a story, you have this like collective set of experiences and this collective set of stories and this collective set of like images and feelings you want to evoke that goes into your work that imbues it and, you know, indelibly changes it. And so when you get this group of like really different people and all their experiences kind of forming together to make this game, it was nice to see those things kind of come in and give it kind of this really like rich background noise, I guess. And that gave like these little hints of like a story and a place and a time and a feeling that sort of stayed with you long after kind of the main narrative of the game was kind of concluded, and just kind of gave it a realness and a richness. And that in that way, it also felt very similar to Gone Home. Felt like there was a lot of research that was done or life experiences that were kind of stuck in there a little bit.
So speaking of this sort of lore that the game has created for itself, as you go through the game, you can see all the documentation and things that Henry has picked up through the game, and you can read it. You also find that he's been making a sort of journal, well, not really a journal, but he's been typing up his thoughts, and they're sitting there on his desk. And you can sort of zoom in on them to read what he's thinking. Did everyone read those?
Oh,
not really.
I don't think I did.
Yeah, I kind of
no.
missed that.
I like I knew they were there, and I think I only noticed them like maybe halfway through the game, and I was like, "Yeah, I don't care anymore."
Yeah, I found they were kind of awkward to like to read, especially since I was playing on PlayStation, so I'm that much farther away from the screen anyways.
Yeah.
But I tried to sort of pick up, and he'd have little sort of vignettes about how something that happened right before he left where Julia's father contacted him. But I felt like I was kind of missing out on something by not reading every word that was said.
Yeah.
Now, how about Delilah? What did everyone think about her. I know from Twitter and from Jane talking on Twitter about the sort of feedback that she got about Delilah, that sort of opinions were mixed.
I noticed a high incidence of people demonizing Delilah and including her in the conspiracy theory. Like, I saw some whack fucking conspiracy theories about, it was Delilah in, you know, in concert with, you know, the other guy dude thing. And I'm like, what fucking game were you playing? Yeah. No, see, okay, so the high incidence of that correlated to people that I had absolutely every idea that were, like, nasty to Delilah. Because then you don't get a whole bunch of dialogue options. If you're nice to Delilah on a regular basis, she'll actually tell you shit about her life. And you'll actually get an idea of who she is as a character.
Oh, good figure.
I actually, yeah, treated a woman nice, and you actually get to kind of get, like, all these dialogue options. And so if you're immediately suspicious of Delilah from the jump, and you keep that feeling kind of rolling through the game, of course she's going to be really nasty and aloof to you, but if you're actually, like, polite and nice to her, she'll actually, like, open up. And so I tried to keep a respectful distance. I was nice to her, but I tried to keep a respectful distance because my Henry is married and he is not going to really pursue a relationship, especially when we got to that one scene where it's very obvious that Delilah's, like, breathing heavily on the radio.
And she's slurring her words.
And I was like, this feels like a phone call late at night with, like, a high school boyfriend. Yeah. Like, it's really kind of weird.
Yeah.
But I kind of, like, by the end of the game, I kind of made my Henry intimate that maybe a relationship would be possible. So I kind of played it like that, where, like, over time, you know, I thought she's, me personally as, like, another woman, I thought she was, like, not really good at her job, but I also thought that she was struggling with the same kinds of decisions that Henry was, which is, like, there's some shitty stuff that happened to me and I don't know how to deal with it, so I'm just gonna stay out here in the woods and just pretend it didn't happen or just not deal with it very much. And I like that she was complicated. A lot of women characters are not allowed to be complicated or incompetent or not always the best person. Like, she felt real. She felt like a real person. And so I didn't mind the idea that maybe Henry would find her at least a tiny bit attractive, I guess.
Did you... I know a couple people didn't notice, but did you notice that he takes his wedding ring off?
Yes.
And then you have the choice to put it back on, but,
and,
like...
Yeah, and I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Me too. I was like, put that ring back, put it back on too. But I found it interesting because, like, you want to put it back on, but Henry was the one that took it off in the first place. So I was like, Henry, what are you doing?
You don't actually see him take it off, do you? No, it's just on the desk.
It's on the desk, yeah. So you only notice it if you look at the desk.
I also had a feeling that, like, and maybe this is because I don't own a wedding ring because I'm not married, but I was also like, I could also see him taking it off because, like...
working outside.
He's out in the woods. Yeah, like, you could get, like, blisters. It could, like, get, you know, caught on something. But I also know that it's a very symbolic object that's... internal, you know, his internal struggles with his marriage, and is it really still a marriage at this point, because his wife is never going to be the same person that she used to be, and she doesn't remember him, so does it really count at that point? But yeah, so I kind of got that aspect of it, but I totally put it back on.
My first playthrough, I was very forthcoming with information, like, about my relationship and why I was in the park. And I found Delilah was always very agreeable.
Yeah.
Although I do find, and this is probably just a product of going to Catholic school for 13 years, that, like, my initial thing was like, oh, you've named your character Delilah. She is untrustworthy in some way.
She's going to cut off your hair.
She is. She's going to steal your power.
Hair. Yeah.
But I found, like, yeah, my first playthrough, I was forthcoming with information. I did go the romance route because I felt, I don't know, that seemed the most natural to me. And going that way, I thought she was very agreeable. And I just replayed it starting this past weekend, and I actually just finished it like right before we started recording the podcast. And in this playthrough, I did not want to share my personal information with her, and sometimes I wouldn't respond to her. And then it got to the point where she was kind of like prying, and I was just like, leave me alone. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I think that Henry and Delilah are very similar. Like, they're both kind of irresponsible. They're both not willing to face their problems. They're running away from them either through actual physical distance or through just drinking a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of tequila involved.
Mm-hmm.
In Firewatch. Yeah. Yeah.
And even at the beginning where it's just like the text-based things, it talks about Henry, how Julia's sleeping, and he just goes out to the bar to sort of get away from it all.
Oh, gosh. And the options are like, you know, put a chair in front of the door, mm-hmm. or hope she doesn't wake up. And it's like the dialogue is something like, the first time you go. So obviously Henry does this more than once.
Yeah. And there's no option to just not go and not blockade her in her room. Yeah. It's just...
Gosh. The beginning is so like, Henry.
Yeah. I like that he's not a good guy on a lot of levels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like he's super irresponsible.
But I will say this, and this is something that I was really glad about, is that, okay, so he's irresponsible. He makes a lot of fucked up decisions. He obviously has drinking issues or is very into escapism. He's running away from his problems. At no point is he sexist to Delilah. Mm-hmm. At no mm-hmm. point is he a gross, creepy asshole.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is, like, such a big deal, because every time you want to play a game and they want to show that a guy is maybe not a nice guy, it always defaults to like creepy sexist stuff versus like, write a nuanced character.
Yeah.
Guys can be like dinguses without being shitty or horrible. You know, they can just be like crappy, flaky guys. And I like that Delilah was kind of flaky and crappy in the same way, because women don't get to be that well-rounded at all, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, she was a bit of a breath of fresh air, like, in terms of characterization.
Yeah, like the fact that she got one. She got a personality.
Exactly. She actually was a character.
Yeah, and her voice acting was just great. I think actually both of the voice actors were great.
Yes,
and
so good.
And it was just like, she was definitely flawed, but ultimately she was just very lonely, and she wanted someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And I think she also realized that she kind of fucked up a couple times mm-hmm. over the course of her career, and that she felt bad about it, and that was kind of also really refreshing, because remorse seems to be something that, like, people don't know how to write very competently or whatever, so... You know, I just thought all around, like, and yeah, no, the voice acting, because the voice acting had to be so strong for that game, because it's basically the only characterization you get is, like, the dialogue options and voice acting. They did such a good job, and I know that the woman that played Delilah had also done voice acting for Telltale before.
Oh, really?
Yep, and the guy that played Henry, obviously, was one of the guys on Mad Men, so.
Who was he?
He's I can't remember his character's name, but he's the guy with like the comb over and like the glasses. He's like he's like the slightly,
oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he's the slightly like nerdy one.
Was his name Harry?
Harry?
I think it was Harry.
Yeah. The actor's name is Rich Summers. He did a really good job, because I was expecting him to just sound exactly like his Mad Men character, because he has a very distinctive voice. But he actually didn't. He just sounded like Henry. He sounded like a tired, kind of like normal dude out in the woods. Mm-hmm. Very frustrated.
I like when they have the interaction. Gosh, I don't remember what it is, but they're like, oh, yes, darlings, very fancy. And they both do this, like, terrible highbrow British accent. I love it so much. Like, yes, quite, yes. That's so good. And the cave where he, like, sings into it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Also good.
Which is also, like, I always think it's really funny and cool when people take advantage of actors also being, like, stage trained. Because, okay, so another good example of this is any time in The Flash when they get Jesse Williams or Grant Gustin to sing. Because both of them are trained singers. And it's just like an excuse to see like Grant Gustin singing.
Yeah, I remember watching him on Glee.
Yes.
Yeah, like ages ago now.
Oh my God. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, the voice acting, it, you know, helped to make them feel like, you know, actual people, like everyday people.
Yeah.
You know, the inflections were all there. Delilah's sarcasm was great.
Her sarcasm was like, top notch.
Yeah. I liked the little touches on the map, like when you name things or you find things and he like Henry will like scribble something on them, and it's like, oh yeah, like the rock slide or whatever that you name, I think there's a couple different things you can name it, and it like pops up with whatever you named it in pencil, like in his writing on the map. I thought that was really cool.
That's cool. I don't think I noticed that. I noticed the Actually, yeah, nothing on the map. I noticed, like, the fire, when you sort of mouse over it, says what it is. But yeah. I don't know if I named anything on the map. I did find a turtle my second playthrough. I didn't find any turtles my first playthrough.
What did you name your turtle?
Shelley Duvall.
Oh, mine was Turt Reynolds. I was like, Turt Reynolds, that's my turtle. And then I kept him in a box for the whole summer.
And it made me sad at the end when I'm going away from the fire and my turtle's still in the box.
Oh, I took him with me.
Oh, you took him with you. Yeah. I didn't even know you could do that.
I picked him up and I was like, come on, turtle, we're leaving. I couldn't just let him die.
I didn't want him to die, but I didn't even know that taking him with me was an option.
Yeah, you can like, you can pick him up, I think like every day, and then you can like tuck him in your shirt or something. And then you can, like, take him wherever you want.
Although, my second playthrough when I found the turtle, I also didn't get on the helicopter.
Oh, so you, like, for real died.
I for real died.
Secret ending. I thought that was so good.
Yeah, that was sort of surreal. Like, I had heard that it could happen, so I just, like, hung around in the tower. I found Delilah's bottle of tequila, and then I just watched the helicopter fly away. I was gosh. I guess I'm dying now.
I guess that's it for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Delilah left. My wife is in Australia. I'm just gonna let the flames take me.
Oh Jesus. God. Oh God. That's so dark. That's so dark.
Oh my goodness.
Oh Jesus.
Well, I guess, you know, get drunk.
Oh, did you guys ever actually do a Delilah? Like, I don't know if you guys got this dialogue option, but Delilah tells you about her sister, and she says that the best thing to do with the tequila
is
to chill it in the river. You can actually do that. If you put a bottle of tequila in the river and come back to it the next day, you pick it up and it's cold.
Huh. Where do you get tequila?
That is a good question. Where did I get my tequila from?
I know I had
I had a
whiskey.
Bottle of, no. Yeah, no, it was the bottle of whiskey. It wasn't the tequila.
From the girls.
She said to chill the tequila in the stream, apparently. I thought that was like a really nice touch, though, that you just could do that. That is something you could actually just leave a bottle in the water for a while.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Apparently there's a bunch of sort of Easter eggs. Like, I heard there's like a Mass Effect or a Dragon Age Easter egg. I did not find those at all.
I didn't find those either. Not that I think I would have been able to recognize them.
Really?
If I had.
Yeah.
There's, I did find the Gone Home Easter eggs, though.
What were those?
Is the
if
duck
you go
in the
out,
game?
Yeah, it's the duck. The duck is way out in the lake, and you see him after, like, the first 2 days. Also, one of the books that you pick up from the book, like, you know, like, it's the book. It's the dad's book from Gone Home.
I don't remember seeing, like, Mass Effect references. Now I'm curious.
Yeah, and then apparently there's, like, one thing that's in the game that no one, or at least last time I checked, like, Jane's Twitter, she said that there was one thing in the game that, like, nobody had, like, publicly mentioned finding yet. So I was like,
really?
Oh, God, yeah, I know there's at least one Dragon Age reference in the game because Jane put it there, so.
Hmm.
I'm sincerely thinking it's a jawbone.
Oh, like, my God.
Probably a jawbone, yeah.
Is that it?
I don't know. I'm just taking a wild guess. Because
there's definitely a jawbone. I've found that. I just
soulless, I'm sure. Yeah.
I didn't connect it at all.
Oh, that's funny. I can't escape Dragon Age.
All right. Well, does anyone have any last thoughts on Firewatch? Or are we good to wrap it up?
It's a good game. Play it.
So this week we have a couple questions that we got from Twitter that don't entirely relate to Firewatch, but we're going to get to them anyway. So our first question comes from the Cartridge Brothers on Twitter. Who is your dream guest? I don't have any, like, super pie-in-the-sky guests yet that I can think of.
Jennifer Hale?
Oh, well, I guess, like, dream big. other than that, I'm not really sure.
I'd sort of been, like, I haven't put any super pie-in-the-sky people on the list just because, you know, this is our third episode.
Yeah.
But my dream guest is Chris Avellone, who made Planescape Torment and Fallout 2 and Baldur's Gate and a whole bunch of awesome CRPGs that I love. I would like to talk to him about video games. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Apple Cider, did you have any dream guests from Justice Points that you just never quite got?
Yeah, Jennifer Hale, Ashley Birch.
Oh, Ashley Birch would be good.
Now you got Anthony Birch, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oink, oink. This is something we actually covered, or, you know, we talked about when we did our panel at GX3 last year, because, yeah, people asked us the same question. Who are the guests that you, like, really wanted on the show and then just never got to have? And it was basically, like, Ashley Birch and Jennifer Hale. I mean, like, there's so many people in gaming that we got to talk to. Mm-hmm. We were extremely lucky.
Yeah, you guys had some great guests.
We were fortunate beyond measure. So the fact that the two people that we didn't get were, like, Jennifer Hale and Ashley Birch, like, I don't think we really suffered at all. Like, I got to talk to, like, Martin Salleen, who did Unravel. Yeah. I got to talk to Mike Rugnetta, who is my Twitter friend now. Like, our seventh episode in, we got to talk to a Blizzard developer. Like, that just doesn't happen at all. Like, the fact that we only had, like, two pie-in-the-sky guests we didn't land was just, like, I think we did okay.
You done good.
Although I know. I still love to talk to Jennifer Hale, though, and Ashley Birch.
Actually, now that you mentioned those two, I would also really like to talk to Laura Bailey.
Oh,
yes. Yeah.
She does so many good things. Honestly, just her as the boss in Saints Row is just, like, I'm in love with her. Her / me, my character created with her voice.
If I ever talk to Laura Bailey, I think my boyfriend would just explode, because that's his favorite voice actress.
Yeah.
Ashley Johnson would be good, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was she in The Last of Us?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Tales from the Borderlands. She's gorgeous. Mm. Yeah, the only reason that I made that connection was Laura Bailey is on a D&D YouTube show.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Matthew Mercer is the dungeon master. And it's, like, all voice actors playing Dungeons and Dragons, and it's amazing. It is so good.
Yeah, they had Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Like, part of the campaign, because Vin Diesel is, like, actually a huge D&D nerd.
Yeah.
Like, huge.
And Ashley Birch actually went to one of their episodes. So she did, like, a one-shot, I think, with, like, a goblin campaign. So she plays a goblin in one of the offshoot games that they do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really good. Like, so many voice actors, like, all in one place.
Yeah, so they do the, like, little bit of role-playing with, like,
they
voices.
They do the voices, and yeah. It's so good. So, and, like, because Matthew Mercer is the dungeon master, he does so many different voices all throughout the game. Like, yeah, it's really good. If you get a chance to watch it, I would recommend it. Any other guests you can think of?
That's all I can think of right now.
I'm sure, like, once we get going.
Like, if you want to get real crazy, Tim Curry, but...
Oh, my gosh.
He does a lot of voice acting, or he did a lot of voice acting, but I think that might be reaching a little too high.
Well, I have to ask you guys, because you guys are bigger BioWare fans than I am. Mm. Would you freak out if you could get, like, Patrick and Karen Weeks?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because we could talk about a lot, but at the same time, I feel like I would get a lot of, like, you'll see, or I can't answer that, or... Because he's, like, just as cryptic on Twitter alone.
Yeah.
But it would be cool to talk to him. Talking with anybody from BioWare would be really good. Like, I have Sam Meggs on my list of people that I want to talk to, and then she got a job at BioWare. So I was like, okay.
Perfect.
Like, now she's an assistant writer there, so I was like, well, okay. You could also talk about BioWare in addition to the two books that you've written, so. There really are so many people, and, like, just a couple minutes of thinking, like, we've come up with more people that we didn't have on the list, so.
Yeah. Now our list is longer.
Yeah. So thanks a lot. Let's see. The next question that we have is from The Musty Hobbit on Twitter. And he says, I have yet to pick up a PS4. Aside from Firewatch, can you talk me through why I should now or if I should wait? I have only ever owned PlayStation consoles, so I am extremely biased to having PlayStations. I know that, I think there's a new PlayStation coming out with a bigger hard drive.
So and better graphics and a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
I mean, like, I find that the PlayStation offerings are pretty good. The only thing that I am super cheesed about is the Tomb Raider game.
Fucking Tomb Raider.
Which I still fucking have not played because I'm waiting for it to come out on the PlayStation because it is not actually out yet. In my opinion, because that's its native console, and I don't care what anybody says. But anyway,
I got a PS4 last November, despite not really owning a ton of consoles, and I actually got it to play Journey.
Oh yeah,
The game that's only like 2 hours long.
So good though.
But it had gotten remastered for PS4 though, and I felt that was a justifiable purchase. Like, I'm gonna spend like $299 on this PS4 just for this 2 hour game. But no, I mean, if you can justify 3 or 4 really solid titles to yourself for a PS4 and you can get a good deal on it, like what I did, which was like a Christmas time deal, which was like $2.99 on Woot. If you don't really care about the like 400 whatever that's referring to, 4K? I don't know. 4K, yeah, 400, 4,000, whatever. It's like a zero. It doesn't matter. If it doesn't matter to you about the 4K video or whatever.
Or the bigger hard drive.
You can actually install a bigger hard drive.
True.
Pretty easily. Yeah, like you can just throw in a 1 terabyte, no problem. Mm. But if you can justify at least like 3 or 4 really solid titles that you really want to play, you can see that price drop happen once you get closer to the 4K coming out, I think. You can also get a refurbished PS4 pretty cheap. And also, it doubles as a media player that also plays Blu-ray. So if you don't have a Blu-ray player yet, well, boy, howdy do you have to add value now.
Yeah, you can watch, like, what do I have? I have Netflix. And I think in Canada it offers the Show Me app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's not, Show Me's not on Xbox One, it's only on Xbox 360, which is weird.
Oh, that is weird.
There's also Hulu, for Americans there's Hulu, there's Amazon Prime Video, there's, you can use Plex, you can use Flix, there's also Netflix, and you can also get NFL.
Oh.
You can get NFL stream, you can get ESPN, like you get a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I find, it's a good console, I think.
Yeah.
Plus, they have, like, the PlayStation Plus, like, subscription.
Yeah.
And it costs, like, if you want to buy, like, a year of it, it's only, like, I think $50. That's Canadian. And then you get, like, free games every month, which is kind of cool. So, I mean, I've played some really cool games, like, indie games and stuff that have been free that I probably wouldn't have played otherwise. So, that alone, I think, is worth that price. So
yeah, my thoughts on this is that if you've gone this long without a PS4, you may as well just wait into the new shiny, fancy one. But I'm also an Xbox girl. Like, I've played, I think, maybe 6 games on PlayStation 4 in the 2 years that I've had one. But I don't know. I'm sort of mad about this new one coming out because I don't want to buy a new PlayStation. I've already bought 2 PlayStations because one broke right out of warranty. I would wait for like the newest and fanciest thing while at the same time being angry that there's going to be a newest and fanciest thing.
As there always is in the console world, it seems.
Yeah. Well, this one's a little bit out of character, though, you have to admit.
Yeah, like, yeah. Usually they'll, I mean, they upgrade the hardware, like, they go from the PS to the PS Slim or whatever, they upgrade the hard drive, but this seems like an actual leap in graphical capability, so I don't really like that. And I feel like for developers especially, it's going to suck because you're going to have to develop your game twice, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I say buy one. But, I mean, that's also it's also a big purchase that you need to, you know, weigh things out and see.
Yeah. I guess if you're not super concerned about the graphical capabilities and frame rates and stuff, which, honestly, I'm not that concerned about, then... Mm. It may be worth it, or it might be worth to wait for the new one to come out and get the older one cheaper. But there are good games. Like, I love Until Dawn. Until Dawn's probably one of the system sellers for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so creepy.
It's basically like, we're basically saying if you want to spend the money, spend the money. But you know what? I'm never going to be like, yes, you absolutely have to spend $300 to $400. I'm never going to suggest that to anybody because that's a lot of money for a lot of people.
Yeah, especially like a lot of the games on PlayStation are available like on PC. So
yeah, exactly. You know, yeah.
Tomb Raider is out on PC.
I'm still not going to play it on PC because I played the last one on PC and that was a shit show.
Yeah, so our Tomb Raider episode. Ago. Yeah, you know what? Our Tomb Raider episode isn't going to be until like December of 2016 because that's when the game is going to come out and I'll finally play it. So stay tuned for that because it's going to be a while. So I think that brings our Firewatch episode to a close. Apple Cider, if people want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Apple Cider Witch. Because I changed my name. I also have my portfolio for art and writing at ciderandlemonade.com.
Pam, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter at jasyla_, that's jasyla_, or you can find my blog, cannotbetamed.com, or you can find me on YouTube at cannotbetamed.
And you can find me at Kaleri on Twitter, it's Kaleri with an underscore.
If you have any feedback, questions, people, or topics you'd like to hear on future episodes of the show, you can reach us at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter @_MediaMavens. And if you like the show, please leave us reviews and ratings on iTunes or Stitcher as it will help people find us. And we don't have any so far.
Give us reviews. Right, thank you, everybody, and we will see you next time. Oh my god, I'm like blushing. I feel weird talking about Reiner. Like, oh my god, he's like my grandfather. I don't know.
I know, that's what I was like. I was like, he's like a older dude.
Oh my
god.
But I mean,
like, older than the older dudes that I think are like cute.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, okay, but there's May and there's Zarya fan art, so that's cool. So, okay, we're good.
Yeah, that's good. We're good. Need to like change the track and boop. Oh my gosh. God.